Hello and welcome. As always, even though we are under the Two Generations Gaming banner, this is One Guy Reading. Whether you meant to or not, you've found Noob's Book Club. I'm Sean, noob of all trades from Two Generations Gaming. And in this podcast, I am reading and reacting to Dragons of Fate, the latest volume in the Margaret Weiss and Tracy Hickman Dragonlance series. In this particular episode, I am reading and reacting to Chapters 12, 13, and 14. This episode was supposed to come out on Tuesday, and then it was supposed to come out on Thursday. It's coming out on Friday of this week. I've already started to take notes for the next three chapters so that I can get back on my Tuesday-Thursday schedule next week and stick that to the end of this book. I think I mentioned at the end of last episode that I'm going to read Jurassic Park next. I explained why. If you want to know why, you can go back and listen to that episode for the explanation. I have a bit of a headache today, so if things seem a little off today, that's why. I apologize. It's been incredibly warm here. I just think I haven't gotten enough water over the last few days, and it's starting to take its toll on me today. But I intend to power through and get this posted so that I can move on and start to think about the next episode. Episode 5, Chapter 12. Destina is kind of a pain to start this chapter. Honestly, I just wanted to write that. I sort of miss hate reading the first book. I mean, she is a pain, but not in the spoiled little rich girl way. More in the we live in a world with magic, but no running or hot water way. She wants to take a bath. So Will the Retainer drags a tub, buckets of water, and soap into the room for her. She also, understandably, doesn't want to wear her mud and blood-stained clothes. He provides her with clothes from one of the dead nobles. She even protests initially. He replies, quote, she's dead, end quote. Then maybe he lies by saying how generous the woman is, and she'd offer if alive. After dressing, she meets with Titus. He asks about Gwyneth. She confirms that she knows her and how she saved Destina and Taz. He seems stuck on her as a spy, perhaps working for the dragon. This upsets Destina, and she asks to speak with Gwyneth. He can't escort her to the dungeon right now, and takes the opportunity to throw a thinly veiled threat towards Taz. Then he abruptly ends the conversation and dismisses her. Taz finds her and fills her in on the details of the night before with Gwyneth. He also tells her where the other members of the party are that morning. While talking, he mentions going up to taunt the dragon. She distracts him by asking him about the maps. He happily shows her, and they chat about that instead. While discussing the details of gnomish lore, Raistlin and Magius show up. Ah, just the Kender I'm looking for. Tell me about the dragon orb. Destina looks concerned that Magius knows about it. Raistlin explains. Taz hesitates and deflects, even after Raistlin tells him it's okay that Magius knows. Taz would rather tell about the time he smashed one. While telling that story, he tells why he's reluctant to tell the other story. Death and destruction. It all makes him feel sick inside. He also mentions the dragon traps. This piques Magius' interest. Taz doesn't want to show them until Magius says he can be a hero if he does. Destina finally confronts Raistlin. During the brief conversation, he lashes out about her role in the current snafu. She responds by moving away from him and closer to Taz. He leads them to the tower. The traps are on the first floor. Leading them to the spot where the traps are, he points. Magius responds with anger. There are no traps of any kind here. You lie, Kender. I should have known better. Taz defends himself and asks Destina to do the same. She confirms. Magius insists. He leads them into the area. No traps. Instead, just more statues. But these ones are praying instead of holding weapons. Taz, despondent, gives more detail. Destina again insists he's telling the truth. Magius concedes that he sounds like he is, and that she agrees, so there must be something there. However, he leads them down the hall and through more doors. This is not a place of death. It is a hall of life. The temple of the High Cleric. Chapter 13. They fall into a hushed and revered silence. Destina reads words carved into the entrance. Those words, the love and understanding of the gods, enfolds you in a comforting embrace. Know that whatever mistakes you made, the gods love you and forgive you. Pretty decent words for what's currently happening, right? Magius tells him that the temple is dedicated to the Solomnic gods. Paladine, Kirijah Lith, Habakkuk, and Meshachal. He then explains each statue and god in order. He says to Raistlin, "Notice that Solinari, the god of white magic, is not there." "Not surprising," Raistlin responds. "Taz can't believe it." He speaks loudly enough that two figures standing before Kiri Joleth hear him and turn around. Sturm and Huma. Huma speaks briefly to Sturm, who comes to tell Magius that Huma wishes to speak to him. "About Solinari missing?" Magius quips. Sturm, unamused and humorless, quote, "I don't think so." When Magius leaves, Sturm confirms the dragon traps. Taz lets slip that Magius knows. Sturm seems concerned by this development. Raistlin shrugs, and the two go back and forth about the temple and being turned into a death chamber. When Raistlin sticks a thumb in the god's eyes, Sturm starts to counter. Titus comes into the temple. He needs to speak with them, but can wait until after their prayer. "No interruption," Huma says, and Titus asks them to leave the temple to keep this business away from the gods, who don't need to be troubled by it. He turns on Raistlin and Magius, telling them that he heard about their visit to the dungeon. He then asks if they spoke to Gwyneth. Magius did not, but Raistlin treated her wound. Taz went to tell her about the song and how they need the dragon lances. Huma, as we know, visited her too. Well, she escaped. "How?" Huma asks. Magius says that Titus suspects that they helped her. Titus makes a quip about sprouting wings. Taz says she's a dragon. Huma looks despondent that she left. Titus scoffs and orders Taz locked up as an accomplice. Huma blames herself for her escape. Magius says it's probably for the best. Human and elf? It'll never work. Raistlin remarks about the irony of Taz being locked up for telling the truth for once in his life. Afterwards, Raistlin and Magius talk about planning to go to Palanthas. "But the Minotaurs," Sturm warns. "Don't worry," Raistlin assures. "We travel by magic." "What about Huma and Titus?" "We'll just tell them the truth. We'll tell them that we're going home." Chapter 14. The mage go to their rooms to gather spell components and supplies for the trip. They need some place to cast the spell. Magius suggests the library on the 14th floor. Almost no chance of being disturbed up there. Raistlin remarks that he is hesitant to walk that many stairs. Magius speaks a word, and the staff levitates them. Raistlin wishes to impart that knowledge to his future self. Another word, and they settle back to the floor, outside of the library. Magius shows Raistlin around the library. A fresco on the wall blends into a map on the floor. The map, parenthetically blessed by Kiri Joleth, shows all dark tiles, parenthetically the Dark Queen forces, surrounding a small patch of silver, parenthetically the tower. Magius remarks how much he loves the library and his fear of what will happen to it if Takisis takes the tower. Raistlin encourages Magius to cast the spell. Magius smiles and pulls out a key. Raistlin says, "What is this Harry Potter shit?" Not really, but he doesn't remember the key from the spell before. Magius explains that it is the key to the tower. The former head gave one to all who passed the test. The new head rescinded that. Magius refused to give up the key, so the head banished him from coming back. "Okay, so how's that going to work?" Magius cockily replies, "Trust me, I got this." Paraphrased, parenthetically. Magius opens the portal. They talk about Raistlin's time there. He tells of the story of the mage who cursed the tower, but gives no detail. He, however, looks forward to seeing the tower in its former glory. Okay, Magius will go through and hold the portal open. Except, the head closed off the portals. Damn. So how do they get in? The old-fashioned way. Walk up to the door and use the key. What about the Grove? How does Raistlin's time shift affect his status as a wizard in the eyes of the Grove? Good question. Let's leave it in the hands of Lunatari. Okay, I either make it or die, Raistlin muses. Let's go. Magius suggests traveling to a tavern called the Night of the Rye. Parenthetically, a play on words. If you know, you know. In parenthetical. And then go through the Grove into the temple. They travel on the hand of the god to an alley near the tavern. They need to figure things out, and then Magius points out the tavern. I must have missed Sturm's warning from the previous chapter during my first read, because I said to myself, oh yeah, dummies, there's Minotaur everywhere. They watch as the Minotaur pour out of the tavern onto the street. Two square off in a battle. At first, they watch the fight and the other Minotaur wager. Then, Magius gets the attention of one of them to make a bet. Raistlin can't believe it. I'll believe it, buddy. Get a spell ready, and make it a good one. Once the Minotaur realizes what's happening, Magius, Magius shouts to Raistlin to get to the grove. They run, chased by the Minotaur. Once he thinks he's clear, he looks back. Magius raises his staff, speaks words of magic, and blasts the Minotaur with lightning. Raistlin follows up with what I can only assume is a magic missile. Having fun? Magius asks. Raistlin had to admit that he is. The spells prove to be enough of a diversion to get them to the grove. It immediately starts to try to take them. It will pass, Magius insists, once it recognizes us. Or I die, Raistlin thinks. Once they do get free, Raistlin asks about the Minotaur. They stand at the edge of the grove, but one gets brave enough and comes in to the grove. Put simply, Magius said, quote, "That was a mistake," end quote. And sure enough, the grove attacks the Minotaur, and he ends up running, turning tail and running back to his colleagues, quite injured from the attack. After another attack by the grove on Magius and Raistlin, the Magius successfully repels. They continue on to the tower. They both gain entry. Raistlin muses that before he came as a master, now he comes as a nobody. And now for my reaction. For these chapters, I only talked about what I liked least and what I liked best. There's no real new characters, and the pacing I still feel is good, especially with altering up the settings by sending the two mages to Palanthas to look for something. And it looks like that continues into the next couple of chapters, although there are some new characters coming up, so I'll at least talk about that in the next episode. But for this episode, this is what I liked least. Let me preface this by saying, I might be wrong about Titus. I thought he was probably just a character introduced as a minor foil in the Gwyneth story. Now, though, it looks like he's here to stay. Not only that, but he's acting like a grade-A douchebag. Yes, you guessed it. Time for one of my patented arguments against myself. Titus annoyed me these chapters, especially the scenes with Gwyneth. He refused to listen to reason and only considered his own narrow perspective. Magius, by the way, started to sound the same. He, however, had proof on his side. In his time, there are no dragon traps, and he showed them. Titus, on the other hand, relies only on his paranoia. Okay, yes, but the man is literally in a battle where the fate of the entire world hangs in the balance. He watched entire city-states fall in the matter of minutes. The dragon incinerated an entire party of men, women, and children. 1,000 of them? That left him with less than 100, and none of them actual soldiers. The enemy, a literal god, will no doubt finish the job when she arrives, and there's nothing he can do about it. So yeah, he has a reason to act irrationally. Hell, maybe in the face of that, he's actually acting rationally. There can be an argument made for that as well. Okay, but stop invalidating my opinion with your logic and facts. This is the internet, buddy. We shout unfounded arguments at one another, and the loudest wins. But seriously, just because his behavior makes sense, that doesn't mean that I can't be annoyed by it. I've known too many people who refuse to listen to reason and stubbornly hold on to their beliefs. More often than not, that works to everyone's detriment. So, I fully admit that it is my issue, but hey, it's my book club. I get to define the issues that concern / annoy me. You are free to respond in any way you see fit. I've said more than once that I welcome respectful debate. And now, what did I like best? It's almost like Weiss and Hickman heard me last episode. Of course, that's ridiculous. Unless my plea cut through the fabric of time and space to arrive on their desks just as they discussed the plot for these chapters. Because I asked for more Raistlin and Magius, they gave me more Raistlin and Magius. Full disclosure. I already mentioned that I hated Magius at times during these chapters. However, he had a reason for not believing Taz. So I understand his point of view so much better than Titus. Who would you believe? Your own lying eyes or an unreliable Kender? Exactly. Besides, they more than redeemed him by the time I got to the end of the chapter 14. He brings such fun and joy to the story. When they poured it into the city full of Minotaur, at first I expected either them to have to sneak through the city or cast some sort of illusion or other diversion spell and outrun their invaders. Never in my wildest fantasies did I expect what actually happened. Even when Magius set it up, I thought he was bluffing. He proved more than once that he has jokes. Then again, now that I think about it more now, that Huma usually bailed him out by telling the person that he was only joking. That's neither here nor there, but I might not have been quite so surprised by it if I paid more attention to that little detail earlier. Then, he actually went through with it. After the initial shock wore off, I laughed at the line about Raceland grabbing his robe and sprinting. Then, they actually wrote that Raceland admitted to having fun. No sarcasm, just genuine joy. For someone who remembers Raceland as the god-hunting psychopath, that comes as a pleasant surprise. Finally, at the end of the chapter, he reflects on his state as a mage. You might interpret that as him pining for the power he lost when the connection with Fist Tandantilus severed. I, a hopeless optimist, think that he relishes having and living his own life. Yes, he misses the power. However, with Magius as his guide, he could easily obtain that power without the soul-devouring corruption. I truly hope that these words travel through space and time to arrive on Weiss and Hickman's desks and, parenthetically, if they hadn't already planned it this way, truly give Raceland a worthy redemption arc. I already know that Magius' death plays a large part of that. I just hope that's the plan, and not the alternative of Magius' death showing him just how futile hero worship is. I guess we just wait and see. For now, I continue to enjoy the friendship and mentorship between the two. I hope that everything works out for the best for Raceland. And, dare I say, I pray that this series ends with him and his brother, his real brother, reconciling and bringing peace to Caramon. What can I say? Age softens you. As always, thanks for listening. You can find us, if you haven't already, at www.twoguysgaming.net. We have articles and a link to our socials, including our YouTube, where I mostly have videos up about my daily RPG calendar playthrough, but earlier this week I posted a couple of Magic the Gathering videos because I've been writing articles about the latest Magic the Gathering set. So I posted a couple of videos of questionable gameplay with a day one deck for Wilds of Eldraine. You can check those out as well. I will be back with this series on Tuesday of next week. That will finish up book one of volume two of the series. And then on Thursday, I will start up with book two. I will talk to you then. Bye, guys.
We are Two Guys Gaming.